place. We also have the coveted VIP party Friday night that takes place in there for our VIP members and all the kind of cannabis luminaries who show up. And it's a really special thing where, sometimes we have keynote speakers, sometimes we have product sampling, that kind of stuff. And in a way, it's a little bit of the heart and soul of HempFest.
I've got to ask the question because, people are asking, if it's legal, why are you bothering?
Not only, of course, do we have a lot of goals and a lot of work to do, but while we're having this conversation, somebody in America, many people in America, I think one every 19 seconds, is going to be arrested for cannabis and their life is going to change and they may lose their job or their reputation or their money or their freedom or their children, all kinds of things. But there's something else, too. I mean, not only do we have a lot of work to do, and just because you can have a half ounce in each pocket and walk down the street in Seattle, and just because our drug dogs don't smell for pot anymore, no reason to give up. But, in Germany, every year they have this thing called Oktoberfest, and as many as 1 million people celebrate the culture of beer. And I'm not sure that beer has ever been illegal in Germany. So we don't see any reason why, if cannabis was completely legal, that there wouldn't be a reason to have a huge cultural celebration of all things cannabis.
Seattle Hemp Fest. It started out. You didn't start out with 100,000 people passing through and hundreds of bands and all that. It grew. So as it's grown in size, at what point? When do you think Seattle Hemp Fest became a truly national event?
That's a really good question. I know when we became an international event, and that's when the police handed out Doritos at our event instead of arresting people in 2012, I think, maybe 13, maybe the year after it passed. And we got international headline. I mean, gosh, I was giving interviews to China and France and Mexican journalists all over the planet.
Well, again, Vivian, I'm looking forward to seeing you. Well, thank you so much. Vivian McPeak, Executive Director of the Seattle Hemp Fest. Viv, thank you so much.
That was Vivian McPeak, the Executive Director of Seattle Hemp Fest. This is Doug McVeigh with KBOO News.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Layla Yao, Robert Onstott, Ray Bodwell, and Dan Raphael. The producer is Theo Burke. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News, the Oregon News Service, and Chris Andre. Our engineer tonight is Liam Delta. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR in Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Brian Pritchett.
And I'm Lisa Loving. Coming up tomorrow on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Joanne Hardesty hosts Voices from the Edge. At 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Per Fogering speaks with John Michael Greer about his book, Dark Age America. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews writer Jesse Ball about his new novel, How to Set Fire and Why, the story of a teenage girl who has lost everything and will burn anything. Are you a KBOO member yet? Get over to www.kboo.fm and click on Donate.
And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station.
That's right. It's Wednesday. The news has wrapped up. So it is time once again for News from the Boo, our weekly roundup of items of interest here at the station and in the greater listening community. Tonight, we're speaking with Selena Chow, KBOO's brand new digital stewardship resident. We were just talking about you last week, Selena, so I'm so glad that you've come in. Welcome to KBOO, first of all.
Thanks. It's really great to be here. It's really fun energy and environment with the staff and the volunteers and our board members.
We want to hear, just to begin with, a lot about the project that you're currently working on for KBOO.
Okay, well, let me tell you about the program that I applied to and got placed in. It's called the National Digital Stewardship Residency, and the acronym is NDSR. It's kind of an acronym that we use for shorthand. It's we use on Twitter. In case you're more curious, you can just, you know, search for hashtag NDSR. So the National Digital Stewardship Residency is a nationally funded program. It places 7 residents, and I'm one of them, in public broadcasting host sites around the nation. So my cohort is 7 people, and we all have an interest in helping archives or public broadcasting organizations preserve their materials digitally. So most of us are trained archivists from master's programs in library and information science, or we come from graduate programs in moving image archival studies.
Was KBOO your first choice, or did you have a choice in where you were sent for your residency?
Yeah, it's actually an interesting application process. It's competitive for both the host sites and the residents, who are mostly master's graduate students. So KBOO first had to apply for a spot, and they had to get selected on the initial phase. And then the administrative organization, which is the American Archive of Public Broadcasting, they opened up applications for residents so that the residents could choose and see who was accepted. I originally applied for the 7 hosts that were selected last fall. However, Pacifica Radio Archives was my intended placement. But because of the financial situation that they're in, and it's really an awful situation, I don't know if listeners follow that kind of thing with the health of radio and public broadcasting, but they weren't able to sustain the same contractual partnership that AAPB recommends and requires. So I found out this news. You know, at first we were trying to figure out if it would work with Pacifica, with the staff there. And, you know, I was still very supportive because any kind of archival public broadcasting information is super important to preserve, and learning opportunities would be similar, you know, try to get this content preserved and saved somehow, whatever it best fits for the host. But it's certainly decided, was decided without my knowledge that, you know, Pacifica wasn't able to host a resident for 10 months. So the AAPB allowed me to choose from several, I guess, runner-up type host sites, and KBOO was one of them. It's just a matter of placement and availability. You know, this nationally funded program only has a certain amount of dollars, so, you know, for any given cohort, it is limited to 7 spots. And so even though it was a choice, I was able to choose another great organization. I'm glad that AAPB was really supportive of KBOO. Everybody was, you know, really hoping to involve KBOO. And you know, all the people who applied to this program are really well-deserving, you know, and everybody is doing the same kind of work and deserves the same kind of support, and we're all kind of in this together. But yeah, I was living in Orange County, California, and I was planning to only move up 1 hour north to
Los
Angeles. That
was exactly my next question. Like, how far did you have to move for this?
I moved from Orange County, which is over 1,000 miles away. So actually, during my last weeks in Southern California, which I feel is still my home, I took a walk along Laguna Beach. And there's this initiative to create a whole Pacific Coast Trail. Mm-hmm. And so there's little markers on the ground in California and also the state of Oregon. And so it shows you, like, how far you are from different distances. And I saw that little placard on the ground. I'm like, oh, I kind of need to know that, you know, where I'm going to moving is over 1,000 miles away. And that was just to the border. So I did the move in 2 stages. I have family in the Bay Area and friends, and I always like stopping by there and spending time when I can. So when there was a hard date for starting the residency, I thought, well, I'll take off my current job. I'll spend some time in the Bay Area, which I love to do, and I don't usually force myself to because of, you know, life and work and all that. So fortunately, I was able to do the drive in two spots. One is SoCal to Bay Area, and second was Bay Area to Oregon, which I've never done before.
Had you worked with any broadcast media outlets before coming up to KBOO?
That's a great question. I have not. This whole broadcast experience, anything being interviewed right now, is all new to me. But I have, as part of my archival training and experience, we're moving image archives. And so my interest in archive is definitely digital. I have a background in database management, website development. And because I have also background in being a professional dancer, time-based media is has a unique interest in my mind. You know, these things that are quite ephemeral, right? But are so robust in how they affect people. You can hear it. You know, in terms of moving image and dance, you can see it. There's movement, there's inflection, there's sound, all different ways of communicating, not just reading, you know, typed letters on a page or seeing an object, you know, as far as art or shapes. Yeah.
What format do you anticipate moving the analog material to ultimately?
Sure. So in any kind of archival field, there are standards that we follow, and they're nationally recognized. For audio, broadcast wave is the best. You can encapsulate metadata in there. Highest resolution wave, and also for access, MP3s is pretty standard. You know, you can't always, you shouldn't provide wave files for people to download. It would just be too much bandwidth for what you ultimately want to do. And I think for community radio and for interviews and music, those are the two types that we're focusing on.
What kind of material have you been presented with so far? Has any of the material that you've been given surprised you?
You know, I would think that a lot of the KBOO programmers and staff here who have been around for, you know, different decades of the history still remember the really special programs. For me, I'm still going back there and looking at the titles and seeing what's special about KBOO and what perspectives have been brought to the local community. I think the fact that it's just community radio, you know, side by side, parallel with, you know, what's being picked up nationally, is really important to understand and document and archive with the rest of records being kept.
Yeah, last week when we were speaking with Monica about this project, we started talking about the desire ultimately for listeners and former volunteers to bring in materials that they might be in possession of, but we told them to hold off for now. Any update on when you would like to start receiving material from people out there in the listening public?
Well, I leave that to the staff here because they know best, but there is quite an amount of work that needs to be decided. And right now what I'm working on is conceptually building the structure of the data model. So, and this is like very detailed things, like what do you mean by genre? Like is this kind of information required? What kind of values and terms does that mean? Sorting out all these things with the physical media, as well as what that implies for the intellectual entity. You know, we say that, okay, you have a program, but how is it, how do you interact with it? You know, is it a book? Is it a 5-inch reel? Is it an MP3? When I'm organizing this information and preparing the foundation, so to speak, for managing assets, these little questions have to be answered. Like, okay, well, this one program is over 3 reels, and then you get it digitized. How do all these ideas of pieces of a program fit together, and how are you going to structure it so that a volunteer or a staff member can manage it very, very easily now and in the future?
So hearing you speak about metadata and categorization implies that there's going to be a certain level of searchability within the archive ultimately. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, I think that regardless of the stage of digitization, the idea that we can share the list of programs and titles with audiences is very important. You know, like what was going on in, you know, 1971 in March, and what was being recorded? Do we have something around that time that possibly would reflect the news of that era? Even if it's not digitized, we know that we have some things. And then as time allows and as budget allows, you know, because all this work is mostly driven by grant funds, then we can digitize and provide access to them to listeners.
No, yeah, but be able to tag it with,
you
know, what's the event being discussed? What mm-hmm. is a particular interest? What's the, again, what is the genre? If it's music, all of that stuff would be
right.
fantastic.
Yeah, so I'm building off what is currently being done in KBOO, you know, so it's not changing things. It's understanding the workflow here. It's understanding how programs are currently being described. So if you go to the website and it's program and I think it's genres and topics. So the topical subject terms are going to be included in the archival materials, the physical analog linear tapes, and the description comes from volunteer listening, you know. So volunteers, I know, are a great part of KBOO's work. You know, KBOO's come in, volunteers come in, they create shows, they record shows. You know, like you said, they're ready to bring their stuff in when possible, and also to check content, you know.
Well, I think you can tell I'm really jazzed about this project, and I'm so excited that you're here to undertake it, because it's something we've needed for a very long time. Thank you again for coming in, and welcome to Portland and to KBOO. We've been speaking with Selena Chow, who is KBOO's new digital stewardship resident, and we will speak to you all next week.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring. We are seeking a full-time AM News and Public Affairs Director. Applications are due by 4 p.m. Friday,